Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in and being a part of the broadcast and telling others about it. It's word of mouth that spreads this word. We're getting some great partners out there that are sharing it out there as well. Appreciate it. And thank you so much for tuning in. We've got a special guest today. Really excited about this discussion because loan production is certainly front and center in a lot of people's mind as we look at potentially winding down of refinances. You know, David Stevens out there this week, Joe Farr will talk a little bit about that, is saying, you know, refinances may be going winding down, going away. Well, you better have a strategy, and we have as our special guest Pat Sherlock, president of QFS Sales Solutions, who will be on the broadcast during the Hot Topics segment talking about strategies for recruiting new people into the industry. Really looking forward to that. Pat's been a previous guest on the radio program and certainly doesn't need an introduction for many of you, but we're really excited to have her on the broadcast. As we do each and every week, I want to say a thank you to our sponsors for all that they do. That's Joe and Allison and of course, Wetzel Trott. We've got so many of them. MBS, we sponsor this radio program. But also, we have United Guarantee as a sponsor, and I say thank you to the folks at United Guarantee. If you have not gotten a hold of your United Guarantee rep, I strongly recommend you do so. There's some outstanding folks at that group. We will be having them back on, hopefully again on the radio, to talk about some of the things that they see happening within the MI world and the changes that are happening. But it's good to have them as a sponsor to the broadcast. I want to say a special thank you to our friends at United Guarantee. I always refer to them as UGI. Did that for so many years. Now I'm kind of reprogramming it just to get the full name out there. But it's good to have them with us. Without further ado, let's get over talking to Joe Farr and get an update with on interest rates. And Joe, of course, being with MBS Quoteline, sits on top of the market looking at it all the time. Joe, good to have you with us.
Oh, good to be here. Yeah, today we're up 330 seconds on the day so far, but that's off of early morning lows of down 5. And so we have seen favorable price changing by a number of investors. And so we're moving in the right direction this morning anyway.
Good. That's an encouraging
sign. I wish I knew. I could tell you exactly why. There's not a good reason. middle of the rally, we saw a weaker than expected ISM index, but much of the improvement in prices occurred before that. But speaking of the ISM index, first kind of major look at what's going on in March. You know, most of March announcements are about what's going on in February.
Right.
Well, this announcement's the first sort of new look at what's going on in March. And we have been seeing a number of misses to the downside as far as economic growth goes. Yeah, I mean, jobs, the unemployment claims were a little higher than expected last week. And just about everything that came out was either lower than expected and or lower than the prior month. And, you know, we've gone through a couple years, as you'll recall, where we've had a very strong first quarter followed by and this is speaking from an economic growth perspective, a strong first quarter followed by weaker second and or third quarters. And as a result, MBS prices in second and third quarters have improved dramatically. I just looked back at 2012, and in the second quarter of 2012, MBS prices improved 2.5%.
Wow.
That's prices improving 2.5%.
All right.
And another 2% in the third quarter last year. Now, that was starting from under 1% going up to just about 106 for the Fannie Mae 3%. We're already at a high now, but if we do start seeing the weakness that has been the pattern, we could see an improvement back up to some of those higher levels for the MBS prices.
Interesting. Fascinating that we could be seeing them. So how long is it going to stay in this range, Joe?
Oh, as long as the Fed keeps doing what they're doing. Talk
exactly
today
right.
on CNBC was all about when the Fed stops. How bad is it going to be? And, you know, they're speaking from a stock perspective, but a lot of people expected that just that first hint is going to be a major event. And we've been thinking that. We've been saying that, too. And as far as all the economic data that comes out now, it's exaggerated, whether it's good or bad, it's exaggerated by what influence that's going to have on the Fed.
Yeah, without question. Well, let's get into talking economic data. What happened last week?
MBS prices improved just a little bit last week, not due to economic data. There was a mixture of data, some good, some not so good. Durable orders came in much better than expected, but when you broke it down, most of it was due to airplane orders. So it's you know, it's kind of a one-off kind of thing. New home sales, pending home sales, both showed decreases, which we don't want to see, obviously, in the mortgage world. Weekly jobless claims, like I mentioned, were a little higher than previous and higher than expected. Now, it was very good to see Friday, while the markets were closed on Friday, some data came out. Consumer sentiment came out a good bit
that
better,
was much
than
better than
prior
expected.
Month. Yeah. And so, you know, we want the consumer happy out there because they're going to be buying homes.
Yep.
But as they spend, inflation might kick higher and might force interest rates a little bit higher as well. So, so not a lot came out of the economic news last week. What little bit of help we had in the market seemed to be more toward the issues going on in Europe.
Yeah,
you know, Cyprus, the banking issues in Cyprus came to a bit of a solution. I don't want to call a resolution, but a solution was that depositors are going to wind up losing money. Uninsured depositors are going to lose 60% of their uninsured deposits. So that's on the higher end of what anyone expected. And since some pretty significant waves through the market, especially as you're depositing and you're banking in Europe. I mean, what has come out of the Cyprus issue is that the investment world now knows that the EU is not willing to use taxpayer dollars as easily as they once did. You know, at one point there was such a concern about the breakup of the Eurozone, and they really had to do whatever they could spending taxpayer money to hold it all together. Well, now there's some confidence there, and there's less concern about, you know, the splintering of the euro. And they're starting to say, hey, those who take the risks to begin with are going to be the first to lose their investments. So, you know, equity holders certainly, but bond holders and you know, to a significant degree in Cyprus, depositors are taking the loss. And so it's kind of a shift in sentiment there, but it's a shift for positive reasons, and it's really a shift back to really the way things were meant to be.
Right. And is that going to drive more money, foreign money, into mortgage-backed securities, Joe?
Well, it could. I mean, when you think about depositing big sums of money in a European bank right now, I think you'd have second thoughts. Because people are going to have those second thoughts, there's likely to be some concern for capital availability to make loans, to do the things that Europe needs to do to start building jobs and creating a more positive economic environment. And to that extent, we could see people feeling better about mortgage-backed securities, given their safety, and given that without the growth in Europe, there's less pressure on inflation and maybe less pressure on the Fed. Again, it all goes back to the Fed, creating less pressure on the Fed to begin to slow down their purchases or to send that first signal that hey, we're at a point where we need to slow things down.
Yeah, we're not there based on the data that just came out this last week. Well, let's talk about this week. What do we have? Jobs is a big report coming up on Friday.
Yep. This Friday is the first Friday of the month, so we get the jobs report. We're expecting 180,000 jobs and unemployment rate staying at 7.7% now. The last time the jobs report came out, they expected about 180,000 jobs. We've got 236,000, and the market sold off. MBS prices fell almost a half a point in price. So, yeah, you don't know. I mean, it's a significant report every month, and one that you certainly need to pay attention to. Before Friday's jobs report comes out, there's not a lot this week. The ISM services comes out on Wednesday, and then the jobless claims that precedes the jobs report on Thursday might be important. And there's an ECB meeting this week, Thursday, Thursday morning. It could be. You know, I don't think anyone's expecting a change in – well, there's a small talk about a rate reduction coming out of the ECB. Most likely, the talk coming out of the ECB is going to be about the banking solution that they have begun to work out, as well as trying to create a common regulator for the banks in all of the European nations. So that comes out Thursday morning. So last part of the week could have some significant market moving events.
Well, we are going to be dialed into whatever is going on with MBS Quote Line. Appreciate you so much, Joe, bringing this to us and our listeners each and every week. And appreciate it very, very much. And let's stay here. Folks, you got to get this service. MBS Quote Line is one, the best one out there. And if you want to learn more on how to get a free offer, listen to this message. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quote Line can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quote Line monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quote Line, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quote Line can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteLine.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. And also, we're going to have Tony Garitano on here, continue our discussion we had last week about technology right after Alice Alvey. Are you starting? What's the temperatures up there? You know, everyone, I've been doing this broadcast up here in Chicago. I got off the airplane at 8:50 this morning, and I go, it's cold up here. It was in the 70s when I left, and we had in the 80s over the weekend, Easter weekend. And so, Alice, how was your Easter weekend?
It was great. Thanks very much, Dave. But I did wake up to it was snowing this morning. So
snowing.
So it's spring snow. Yeah, it doesn't last long. But anyway,
that's the most frustrating snow there is. You know, you used to look forward to Christmas, but on Easter, are you nuts? Crazy.
Well, we're kind of used to it. So anyway, but Congress is still on their Easter break. So
the good news
on that is we don't get any new crazy legislation introduced, but we are going to still keep watching some of the pieces that are out there. You know, the main thing I wanted to talk with folks today about is the fact that FHA did publish a proposed rule, and so far it's so lost in all of the other things we're all trying to pay attention to that literally no comments have been posted on this yet. Wow. I need folks to respond to this for a couple of reasons. So I'm going to tell you a little bit. FHA has posted a proposed rule to change the direct endorsement pre-review process. For those of you, so this is, you know, Joe was at economic global level. I'm all the way down to file level right now. You got to retrain your brain just over that commercial break. So in any case, for those of you who might remember, when your company got your FHA approval, you went through 15 test cases or so that you actually sent to the Homeownership Center. They looked at it, gave you feedback, and you cleared it all up with FHA before you actually closed the loan. FHA is proposing that is all done post-closing, that you would close the loan, then they would review it and give you the feedback. And, of course, every one of my customers who I've helped guide through this, you know, FHA training and then the process to help them work themselves through the test cases, there's not a prayer any one of them would want to close the loan before knowing it was insurable. And FHA in the proposed rule gave some statistics, which this is a classic of, you can try and say statistics are working in your favor, but, you know, you can't bend the truth too far. And the fact remains, if 39% of the loans are going to have a problem, then, or 39% of the lenders are going to have a problem with at least one or two loans, then that's a lot of lenders who are going to say, I don't want it post-closing. I want to know ahead of time that my loan is going to be insured. So I'm glad you think that. So in the proposed rule, they say 28% of the lenders had one problem loan and 11% had two loans with a problem in them. So FHA looks like that as, you know, that's a low statistic, and they phrase it a little bit differently, but from my viewpoint, that's where I came up with 39%, and to me, one loan is not, I don't want one loan. Now, I can see from there.
That can sink a lot of shops.
Yeah, especially if I'm new, and this, a lot of times this is one of your first steps into then being able to, you know, build a bigger pipeline, get to hedging a pipeline. You know, I mean, it is part of a step of growth that lenders plan, and the last thing you want is a buyback in that early stage. So I think in FHA's view, they think, is it easier for the customer because this can cause, you know, a week to 10 days delay for a closing? Are customers getting worse rates because of this process? You know, and I'm sure from their eyes, they don't want to be processing people's loans. You can kind of have a little hint in there that maybe they're thinking, hey, our company's not getting enough training before they step into this pre-endorsement review process, and are they finding themselves just doing too much of basic FHA 101 work on these files? You know, I don't know. So I
think
understand, really
you could understand how they could get there. You could understand how they
could get
there.
Okay, So we have till April 22nd to comment on this. It's very easy to comment now, folks. I know for many of you, you say, well, I'm already past the pre-endorsement review stage. How does this impact me? Well, you never know when you might decide you want to open a company or you lose your ticket and you got to start all over again, or how it affects your competitors. I mean, thinking about that, too. So I'm going to comment. I hope lots of you out there would comment, because that's what FHA needs, is feedback from people who've been through the process, and how would you have felt if you had to close the loan first before you got feedback. And I think most people would agree. I don't know if I would want to take that 1 in 10 chance of having an uninsurable loan. I don't know.
Nope.
But that's my two cents on FHA pre-endorsement review, Dave.
Get out there and make some comments. Well, anything else going on? You usually got some bills posting. In fact, there's a Michigan rep out there that's been doing some things, the Consumer Mortgage Choice Act. What's that about?
Well, that's Bill
1077. Talk a little bit about last week.
Yes, Bill Huizenga, he's a Michigan rep. As I said, Common Sense is coming out of Michigan. It's House Bill 1077. And this is the one that's trying to clarify the points and fees test within the qualified mortgage definition. So in QM, as you recall, there's a three-point trigger. And this bill is proposing to say, let's make sure we exclude loan level price adjustments in the points and fees test and make sure we exclude loan originator compensation from the points and fees test. And they mean the comp going directly to the individual originator themselves. So it's a great bill in that regard. Lots of people out there I think this is a good one to follow, folks. Get out there and tell your reps you want support for House Bill 1077.
That's good. What about 1145?
You want to talk about that one too? All right. We have time today. Well, that's the FHA Fiscal Solvency Act. And, you know, each year we get something on the table to try and help with the Mortgage Insurance Premium Fund. And so this is no different. This is House Bill 1145, and essentially going for some of the same things that, you know, we've seen in previous bills, to allow an increase of the annual MIP up to 2%. And to have some changes within the servicing side as well. And it's also established an emergency capital plan. And, you know, really these bills come from people in Congress who believe FHA is standing on the edge of a fiscal cliff on their own, and they want to make sure there's some protection measures in place. in the event FHA needs money from Treasury, which, you know, depending on which side you listen to, you know, I think Paul Mallow talked a little bit about it. MBA Dave Stevens testified and gave some great information that, you know, FHA isn't in need of any checks right now. As long as we have a stable economy for the next few years, they may not need any money.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, that's the key is having a stable economy. And
right.
How do you feel about that?
That's
so anyway,
right.
Hey, I got a question about
you and Joe.
Oh well, yeah, we'll leave that to you. But what about Cordray? There's been a lot of talk about Cordray getting replaced because the Department of Labor had some appointees at the same time. And I was reading an article on the flight up to Chicago today about, you know, the probability of that happening. I think it was Ann Fulmer, who I just adore, and I love her. I love her articles. I love the way she writes. She goes, "Ain't happening." And and at least she's saying, don't take the attitude, which I agree with. Don't take the attitude that, you know, he's going to get replaced and everything's getting thrown out. Not going to happen. But what do you think the possibility of it, you know, Corder being replaced with a five-person commission?
Well, I think, you know, last week we talked a little bit about that with the idea that, I think it was Steve O'Connor, right?
Yep.
He was talking about it also. So for those of you who really want some in-depth info on that from the MBA's viewpoint, I thought it was great feedback.
Yeah.
You can listen to last week's show and the week before. I think we talked about it too a little bit. The idea that, you know, we just, there's a lot of politics involved. And so right now, I don't have a magic answer to that. I don't know if you can completely change the law to change it to be a five-person commission. You know, that takes a change of the law, not just simply someone thinks it's a great idea. So
right. It's not just a new appointment. You know, you can't just appoint five guys. I mean, it's
right.
Yeah, yeah. That's really a good point. I think that's really a significant point.
So I'm not sure that's going to happen too quickly. We're going to keep moving forward. We have Dodd-Frank. Live with it. Right now.
Live with it, get ready, and get trained. And who is the best to train ya?
Well, you know, we're...
Oh, you know what? I got this gal. She lives in Michigan. She's on the Radiola program. Alice Alvey! Got to have her come in and teach you how to be handling all this. So much. Alice, you have got job security like I have never seen.
Well, we try. Yeah, we just want to help people do it right and close good loans.
Yeah, well, you do a heck of a job for it, too. I mean, it's so important. Folks, if you want to learn more about how to get Alice in your shop to train you and help you get some more information, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Tony Garitano after this break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. We've got Tony Garitano on the line. We're going to continue our discussion. Tony, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me, Dave?
We hear you loud and clear. I just had to do a double check on that. Hey, Tony, I was looking at something hilarious over the weekend. You know, it was just too warm to go outside. I say that for everyone up north. You know, when in Austin, Texas, it gets 80 degrees, we come in. No, actually, it was beautiful outside. But I was surfing on the internet, doing some things, and I got this funny, hilarious Facebook post. I got to tell you about it, and then I want to continue your discussion. It shows this guy. It's called the title of the ad, and I thought of you, Tony, when I saw it, or the title of this little video was iPad versus Paper. And it shows this guy coming up to his wife they have a young child. I thought of you because you have young kids at home. And mom and young child were drawing on paper. And the dad walks up and goes, "Emma," and puts the iPad in front of their face to draw some things. He goes, "Use the iPad, it helps them." And the next scene he goes from there is mom has got Post-its all over the refrigerator. He goes, "Emma," and he has Post-its on his iPad. And then he goes to reading a book, and he's going, "Emma, Emma." He's flipping through it, of course, and she's reading a paper book. And then the final, and there's one more scene. She's printing off some paper to read, and he's just exasperated beyond belief. So the next scene, the last scene, is he's in the bathroom, and that roll of toilet paper was out of paper. And he goes, Emma, and guess what slides under the bathroom door? An iPad with a picture of a roll of toilet paper. I think she drove home her point pretty successfully. You can't, there's something you just can't get around with. You're not going to solve everything with technology, but we're needing it more and more. So anyway, if you want to go to my Facebook page, you'll get a crack up when you look at this, at that video. But Tony, we were talking last week about technology and that being end-to-end, and more and more
right.
companies are going, you know what, I don't have time to integrate it. We're so busy just trying to get trained by Alice, staying up in the markets with Joe. We don't have time to do all this. We got to go back to this end-to-end solution. So talk some more about that, because we cut you off last week.
No, that's fine. I know we wanted to continue the conversation there, but I think you're right, Dave. I'm not sure that that's anything new in that I think lenders have always wanted an end-to-end solution. You know, they've always wanted one solution that does it all. I think that the new regulatory environment is making that demand even more pressing these days.
Right, yeah.
To your point, I mean, when there's a new rule coming out every week,
yeah,
it's a lot easier to handle that when you have one system.
Yeah.
So the need is becoming a little bit more top of mind for lenders, and I think vendors are listening, and you are seeing the end-to-end approach winning out over the best-of-breed approach, but I think it has a twist. But I know.
Well, let's get into talking about that twist a little bit. So how do you see it evolving and twisting?
Well, I think that the future end-to-end system is best of breed. And what
so
I'll talk,
you're going back to the best of breed, but it's going to be an end-to-end best of breed.
Right, because I think what happened is, so for example, with let's take Ellie Mae, for example,
right.
and remember their ePass network.
Right.
The whole value proposition behind the ePass network was that we had every service provider under the sun connected to Ellie Mae's core loan origination system through ePass.
Right.
And the problem with that was that the integrations were mostly done by the partners that were integrating to Ellie Mae.
Right.
So some of them were really great integrations. Others were just really very simplistic data dumps, right?
Right.
And there was a lot of manual intervention that had to go on in the loan origination system, even though you were integrating through a connection through ePass, and Dynatech had the MoreVision plug-in partnership as well. That's changing. So what's happening, what I mean, is the best of breed is actually becoming the new end-to-end in that an Ellie Mae, if we just for an example, given that we've talked about them prior,
yeah.
An Ellie Mae may not want to integrate with everyone anymore.
That's right.
But what they will do is they will integrate with a handful of best of breed providers really
okay.
tightly.
Yeah.
So what will happen is you'll be able to have an end-to-end system or a system that looks end-to-end from your perspective as the end user that's actually best of breed. But
oh,
you won't know,
interesting.
You know, because the integrations will be so tight and so seamless.
It won't be perceptible. Imperceptible.
It will be imperceptible to the lender that they're leaving the system, that they're going anywhere aside from, you know, again, to continue our example, Ellie Mae. And you'll see that with all of the major loan origination systems out there. They will be offering you very tight integrations to a select few partners. And then if you have a partner, I mean, they're not going to tell you how to do business, Dave. I mean,
right.
if you have a partner that they don't integrate with already, I'm sure they will be more than willing to do that integration for you. But there will be a light at the end of the tunnel for those lenders that really want an end-to-end to do business with the preferred providers of your loan origination system.
Well, I think it is just fascinating that all that's going on. And Alice, I know you had a question with Tony as we were going down the end-to-end solution route. So, Alice, I'll let you jump in.
Hi, Tony. Hey, I have a question. Actually, one of my questions originally was about people taking the time to make changes in their systems. But
right.
What you're describing really is then being done by the providers. And so, therefore, as a user, I'm gaining that benefit as well. If I don't feel like doing a full market study and shopping, I can just take their preferred provider.
Right. Yes, that's going to be an option. You can take their preferred providers and, do business with them, or you can offer up your providers, which will require, some lifting on your part and the LOS's part, as, has historically been the case.
Do you see that even the small banks and credit unions and companies who really do want it to be one system from, when you say end to end, I think application, obviously all the way through servicing, are those types of entities making the investment today? Do they, how do they approach this?
Well, I think that what's happening is, the smaller banks and the smaller credit unions in some cases did not have a robust mortgage department up until recently. And what they did in some cases is they acquired some smaller lenders, and that became their mortgage arm. And then what they did is they looked to integrate systems and potentially migrate to one system, because in that case, even the smaller players have two different systems and two different
right.
workflows, and we're seeing, I think, the results of that. I mean, if you look at the larger players in the space, Alice, like the Fiservs, the FISs, the LPSs, what they're all developing now is is an origination platform that spans all loan segments that can allow you to do everything within one system of record. So in Fiserv's case, I think they have the best title for it. It's called the Common Origination Platform. I mean, that's just, to me, in terms of, marketing, I mean, that's a perfect name. I mean, every lender
yeah.
wants that. So I think you're going to see more and more of that. But to your point, it will require, in most cases, a system switch. And you're seeing data out of Questsoft in particular shows that LOS conversions are at record highs, and my guess is that that's going to continue over the next few years.
Fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. We got to keep this going, because some of the trends that are going on, Tony, with the Progress on Lending board that you have, the whole group that you have, you really are staying in touch with and on top of the trend lines and where they're going. It's so valuable. Give a quick word before we go to the ad break. Give us a quick word about your upcoming event at in Florida, the Engage Conference.
We are just 2 weeks away, Dave, and I hope it's going to be exciting for everyone. April 14th, Sunday in Hollywood, Florida at the Crown Plaza, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern local Florida time. The Progress in Lending Board, to your point, we name the top innovations in the mortgage space over the past 12 months. We don't tell the winners who they are until that night, and we get them all up on the stage and honor them for really making the industry better. So if you want to see who's out there making a positive difference, we would love for you to come to Innovations on April 14th. Just RSVP on our website. It's totally free.
Yeah, and it's right there, right next to the tech conference and a couple other conferences going on, so you can hit a whole bunch of things. It's an outstanding group. I was there last year. What an amazing event. You do a great job, Tony. Appreciate you so much for being on the broadcast. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy world. So good to have you with us, Tony. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Good to have you with us, folks. Appreciate you being here. By the way, the Prophet Doctor wants to send his greetings out there. I tried to get him on the broadcast today. He goes, metaphorically speaking, I looked in his lobby. It was full, full, full. And you know how it is waiting for getting on to see a doctor. He stuck his head out of one of the rooms and said, Dave, tell everyone hello and remind them of the Campus MBA accounting webinar that is coming up here soon. And it's very exciting, very important to make sure you attend that. There is so much going on with accounting and how we got to tune it up. You go, I'm in pretty good shape. I feel pretty good. You can't feel good about it. You got to absolutely know that you know that you know that you're good about it. So anyway, check it out. Campus MBA, head over to their website and look up the accounting webinar. Andy will be doing that. And I think it starts, next week or this week. It's coming up real fast. So be sure to get out there. Don't have that date right now in front of me. But anyway, check it out. Appreciate you being there, and you'll be glad you signed up for it. We've got Pat Sherlock on the phone, and she just recently published an amazing article that I really enjoyed reading, and it's in the March issue of 2013, March issue of the Mortgage Banking Magazine. And it's the title of the article is Training Rookie Originators. And it's, you know, anyone who knows Pat, she is the president of QFS Sales Solutions in Medford, New Jersey, and she is also can be reached at P as in Pat Sherlock, Sherlock at QFSconsulting.com, and we've got her on the radio today to talk to us about trends in hiring originators. Pat, good to have you with us.
Hey, Dave. Nice to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Good article, by the way. Excellent.
Well written.
Great practical information in here, and I want to talk about it a little bit, get it started here, and then I'm going to invite Alice and Joe to get in here. Joe, I know I've got a couple of questions about the trend lines. He was reading some reports later, so I'm going to get the mic over to him next after I get a couple of questions. But let's talk about the article, because we have definitely seen that there is the loan force originated force is aging, just like the appraiser workforce out there. And I think we quoted you in some statistics that they are getting older, and as more of them disappear off the landscape through retirement, but also through attrition, we're always looking for where do we go look for the next crop of LOs, the loan originators. So that's what caught my eye. So rookies, is that the way to go?
Well, certainly, I tell you, Dave, it's definitely a hot topic at companies, and you've already really mentioned some of the issues that have really driven this. Back in the day when you and I started in the business, certainly that's how you used to come into the industry, but obviously for a long length of time we haven't done that. But when you look at the age of the loan officer, a lot of the studies are indicating that they're 52 years old. When you think for the issue of retirement, many companies are faced with the issue of that in less than 5 years you're going to have a lot of these people retiring. And I think there's also the issue that companies are recognizing is that the sales model is changing. That's all about that social media has come into play. And actually this whole issue of originators prospecting and closing talents that in refinance markets they may not have had to have, but now when you're going out generating loan demand, you're certainly going to have to be a much higher skilled originator. So I think management teams, from what I'm seeing, are certainly the issue of the aging of the workforce, but it's also being driven by the question is, do we have the right sales professional in this position?
Right.
And as a result, they're looking to really kind of change their sales organization, which is what happens when you bring in a rookie program.
Well, I think also you point out aptly in this program or in your article that we used to recruit and we used to bring in newbies. And then as the market expanded, we started, as industry practice, started going and saying, well, let's go steal some experienced people over here at the competition. We can't take the time to, you know, hire these people. The market's too hot. And so that's shifting back is what you're saying. But there's a lot of people out there with some old habits. And I want to put this out there. We have a lot of experienced loan originators listening to this broadcast. And I would like to think because they listen to the broadcast, they're the cream of the crop. And obviously, they're taking time out of their busy day. They could be going to get another loan. And they're listening because they're wanting to learn. So this broadcast for you listeners out there that are loan originators and looking at, you know, well, gosh, is this good for me? Well, listen to Pat. She's talking about the newbies coming in and why some are being successful. And you've got to reinvent yourself. You mentioned social media. You talked about bad habits in this article. Give us some insights as to some of these things that are changing. What is changing?
Well, I think no question the biggest driver, and this is really something that's really just around the corner, in 2017, which is essentially not very many days from now, you're talking about the millennium, the Generation Y individual, being essentially a larger grouping than the baby boomer population is. If that is true, which we know it is, then that's going to really have a tremendous impact to the sales organization, because you're now having people that have different skill sets than an average 52-year-old originator. So I think, again, as mentioned already...
Very good point.
I think,
that's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking less than 1,000 days, not to get people all worked up, but it's really right around the corner.
When you put it in days, it just sounds like so imminent.
Right. When you put it in days, it really strikes home that that population base will be, you know, roughly over 80 million potential first-time home buyers that really have not had mortgages, and our origination staff really has to match to that customer base. So I think the driver is really the reality is that the demographics are changing dramatically, and our sales forces really have to be able to address that. As you know, and as I know, when you go into loan origination companies, you're talking about, you know, salespeople that have had really relatively the same referral sources, you know, really a book of business that has been really driven through their years. Now when you're looking at going, your population base is going to be a different grouping.
Right.
Do you really have the sales force that's going to be able to sell to people that will go online? I mean, if you think about it in the big picture, and I think this statistic is really rather, you know, alarming, that millennium potential customer base, those individuals, They've never had to in their life actually, you know, roll down a window. I mean, if you in a car, when you think about that, you know,
it's all electronic, electric windows. They don't even know a day of the crank.
They don't even know what it is to have a window that you would have to really kind of crank down. So, and you really, as management teams, we have to look at, do we have the right sales force addressing that? The demographic issue is really going to change the game, and it's more than an issue of, you know, I'm now going to do a few flyers. It's more of an issue of having the correct sales skills. And I think a lot of management teams are looking at rookie programs as really a way to realign their sales force to address,
right,
essentially a different customer base. And as we move out of the low-hanging fruit that's been the refinance market, these issues of can you sell and do you have the right talent and are you trained in the right technology for today, they all really come to play.
Well, let's go to Joe, because Joe's been reading and hearing some reports of Stephen's coming around and talking, saying some, giving some projections on volume. Joe?
Yeah, Pat, I was looking at the MBA forecast, and I think the MBA forecast would be quick to admit that their last couple forecasts have been wrong by a lot. But let's use their forecast as a what if.
Right.
Yeah, the NBA forecast says that in the fourth quarter of this year, we'll be doing about half the volume we're doing right now.
Right.
On a monthly basis, and it's going to be a major shift out of refis into and small growth in purchase business. And so, as you talk to people about this, a rookie training program, how do you handicap their likely success as we shift completely out of a refi environment and into a purchase environment as it relates to competing with the experienced people that are out there now?
Well, I think, Joe, you have to look at it in the big picture. Rookie programs really are a growth program for the company. And so, obviously, for some lenders, it's not essentially kind of the way they're going. But if you're moving your company to that next tier, you really have to recognize you're probably going to have a combination of your experienced originators, but you're really investing. In a way, it's very similar to investing in technology. You're investing in new people, so essentially those individuals will give you the growth that as the other folks do retire, that you're going to have a replacement component to. And I think most management teams are seeing that. So I think if you look at rookies just from the standpoint, which is pretty traditional within mortgage banking, that, well, okay, the market's going to be tougher. Do I really want to invest in these individuals? Do I really have the time and effort? I think management teams are coming to really a recognition that as the demographics are changing, they don't really have the right sales force. So we're not saying that the experienced originators are going to fall off the cliff. We are saying that if you're going to grow your company and you have a long-term view that you want to move into the next level of performance, you're going to recognize that the individuals that you need to bring in are going to be younger. And it is an investment similar to technology where, again, if you're hiring correctly the right individuals to be the loan officers and are training them, these individuals become top producers very quickly. I mean, we've done studies, Joe, where we have seen that the actual performance level of someone that's been properly selected, has been trained correctly, and in essence is originating in they're developing their customer base really relatively 60 to 90 days after they come out of these programs. And companies that are currently doing rookie programs, which there are a handful within mortgage banking that have basically gone this path, the production level of these individuals basically are really pretty significant. And what's interesting about it, Joe, is that when you look at it from the age-old, comment as well, I'm going to, if I train them and I hire them and then they, in essence, are going to leave me, I think companies are coming to an understanding that if you don't do this, you're basically going to be out of business at some point. And when you look at the 1,000 days, it's only, before you're talking. It's really right around the corner. So, again, I would say that, a properly selected originator individual and then someone trained correctly, these individuals will basically produce pretty quickly. And really, I think a rookie name for a program is the wrong name. They really are top producer programs because out of every single class, and we've done a lot of these programs, you're going to get your one or two originators that will move into being a top producer. And since that's the case, you're really going to have a significant impact to your production. So, again, certainly you'll have lenders that will say that the rookie approach isn't really for them. But on the other hand, if you have a long-term strategy and you're looking basically to compete, you really have to look at that this is a way for you to increase top producers.
I think the generational component. Joe, I'll be right back. I think the generational component is probably one of the most compelling. Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say the same thing, David. As I began that question, I was thinking that the experienced guys would win out, but quite frankly, the younger guys are networked with the home buyers. The younger guys are in tune to communicating with the home that group of home buyers. So maybe they win. Maybe they're the better suited.
Yeah, and I think actually when you look, Joe, when you look at the actual performance data, and we have it from a variety of clients that have rookie programs, these programs really generate, again, your top producers. And every class, there will be a couple that will come out that will essentially kind of be in your top rung. But more importantly, the class gives you an opportunity to remove what we call kind of your C players. And so by addressing it in the classroom setting before they go out into the field, you're now having a sales force that has A people and B people and not so many of them that are in the C rank, because essentially, even though they've been in the industry, they've had experience, the truth of the matter is that unless it's a refinancing market, they really are not professional salespeople.
I think it's interesting in here you talk about that there's, I would have guessed that college students would be some of the better recruits, and you're saying there's no studies or evidence to that effect. Then I'm going to go to Alice. You comment on that about your article here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's certainly a common approach by companies that they want to establish when they do a rookie program, that they want to go and get the college-educated graduate. And we have done, through our nationwide analysis and validation studies of what traits predict sales success, and these traits are traits that are early on formed, and so what that means is that the individual may not have graduated from college. Now, certainly, if you go to a college and do that type of recruiting, you're just adding some type of qualifier that will lessen the number of people, but it doesn't really have a correlation between those that are successful in mortgage origination. So we're not saying that college graduates cannot be rookies. We are saying that I would not limit them to be the only people in your class, and I would also recommend, and especially when we have done these programs, people from community colleges, people that have worked a couple years. In other words, there's not very many industries where you can have potentially a six-figure income, and where you've been trained and taught. And I think those are the things that will make our industry attractive to other individuals. What we really want are sales professionals, and just because they didn't go to college, which should not be a disqualifier.
Well, that's encouraged a lot of our listeners. Alice, let's get you in on this discussion.
Sure.
Alice, she got her mute
button. Hi, Pat. How are you?
Hey, Alice. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Yeah, we Pat and I can talk for hours about education.
Yeah, this is going for hours. Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, I love the program that you have. And, you know, I guess my question for you is, you know, you mentioned the players and the personalities that come out of your classes. I mean, is there also an opportunity for them to, perhaps they don't fit in perfectly for the salesperson, but they have some other role in the operations? Or do you find, no, the hiring process has to glean that out, get the right personality in this class in the first place with the intention that they move forward? This is just for sales, and if they don't fit into sales, don't try and turn them into a processor. Can you tell me a little
bit
about that?
Sure, yeah, I mean, it's a great point, and just to give a bigger picture and a background, I mean, we have looked at what are the traits, and we've looked at the good, the middle, and the low performers, and so we would tell you that if you're going into having a rookie program, you don't want to invest in those that aren't a match and have these traits that are the 9 personality traits. So we would tell you, as your best bang for the buck, is that when you are recruiting, what you need to have in place is a rigorous hiring process to ensure that, you know, and that's through pre-hire assessments and also the interview process, that you're getting the right people matched for this rookie approach that would be focused on sales. So therefore, just hiring anybody, putting them in a class, and then because they don't work out, then routing them to the operational side, I would suggest that that's really not a good return on investment of your time and your money, because, again, what you want to go through the rookie program on the sales side are people that are going to be essentially successful in mortgage originations. And there should be a rookie program for operational people, which is obviously another topic for another one of your radio shows, because I definitely agree there's certain personality traits that match up with the operational background. It's just not the fact that you failed as a salesperson.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to do a whole series of broadcasts on this, and trying to pick the where we've got some things stacking up here. But in the next 60 days or so, I do want to have a whole series of broadcasts on this topic. But Alice, you do so much training, and you and Pat have gotten to know each other. The importance of training just cannot be underestimated right now, Alice.
Well, no, and I think one of the things, too, that's important and that everyone, I'm sure, is seeing is that the 20-hour SAFE Act class doesn't teach a loan officer how to be a loan officer.
That's right.
Pat, I mean, when you read Pat's article, you can see all the details that have to get layered on top of that for them to be successful. Pat, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think, and again, I've been in mortgage banking for 25 years, just like everybody else on the radio show, and I got to tell you that in mortgage banking, we look at sales as some type of an art and not a science. It is a professional position that not everyone can do, and likewise, the talent and the training component isn't just gleaned, you know, one time, and that's going to generate someone who's going to match for every type of technology change or demographic change. That is not going to work, and obviously, the only thing that supports that type of approach is if you have low-hanging fruit, which is what a refinance market is. So as we move into purchase money, you're going to have these – you have to have the talent part, but you need the training part of, you know, in other words, the prospecting end of it. Just as a quick comment, you know, we did a study on what was the sales knowledge of originators throughout our country, and on just the topic of prospecting – and here we're having the people taking this questionnaire have 25 years in the business. They only scored on a scale of 1 to 10 a 3. So you cannot assume that they know how to prospect, and they need training, and it's just not training on the compliance side or on the technology. It's also on the sales side of it, and that's definitely – for any salesperson out there, the game is different now. You have to be able to deliver a message in a very short time. So training is never over, and it's never over just because you've given compliance or product information to the originator.
You know, I'm looking at the calendar, and the clock, and we've got to exit the broadcast here. I want people to know how to get a hold of you, Pat. Real quickly, I gave your email address earlier, but I think we should get your phone number out there for people that want to call you to learn more about this program.
Sure, I'd be glad to. My phone number is, the area code's 800-875-0222, and my email is psherlock, S-H-E-R-L-O-C-K, at qfsconsulting.com. And, Dave, I'd be glad to send a copy of the article to any of your people out there that may not have seen it. So certainly just email me, and I'd be glad to do that for them.
That'd be outstanding. And, folks, those of you that are experienced, do not think this is game over for you. You are probably going to have to do some morphing and changing, but you know what? That can be healthy. How many of us have had to reinvent ourselves, Pat, over the years?
Right.
We have had to reinvent. I mean, I've been at this for 40 years. In September, it'll be 40 years. How many times have I reinvented myself?
Right.
And I tell you, it's essential. That book, Who Moved My Cheese, is a real good book on this, because the cheese is moving again. I think Joe's comment says, you know, maybe the newbies is the way it is. Well, I'm a champion for the guys that have been at this forever, but they've got to get experience. So if you're an experienced LO or if you're a business owner and you're trying to figure out what should I be doing, how can I get my staff up to date, get a hold of Pat. She's outstanding. Obviously, you can hear from the broadcast today. She knows what she's talking about, and all these studies she quotes, and some of which, a fair number of them, she's put out. Pat, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be with us.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to have you, Pat. We really do enjoy you. And I look forward to having you back when we do that series of broadcasts on origination coming up here within the next 2 months. So not 1,000 days, less than that. 60 days, baby. All right. Pat, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Folks, we're going to have next week as our special guest, my business partner, Chuck Klein, and we're going to be talking about M&A. Mergers and acquisitions. Joe, you've been in the business for a long time. You bought and sold companies. I've bought and sold companies. And, Joe, have you ever seen a time like this where M&A is probably the hottest as it is?
No, it's a great time.
It's a great time, and with all the capital regulations, a lot of people, we're talking about loan originators are at 52 as an average. What are the business owners like? Great time. If you're looking to sell your business, looking at exploring what that's like, be here. Next week, Chuck Klein on M&A. Ben, special thank you to Pat Sherlock for being here. Alice, a few parting words here as we get going to the exits.
I'm trying to think of something. Well, Pat's article. She's got great news in there.
She's got a great article. Yeah, it's a great news. Folks, we appreciate you being with us each and every week and telling others about it. It is really important that you get on this broadcast and share it with those in your community. If you're not going out to the next industry event, make a note. Tell everybody about the broadcast. Appreciate you so much being here this fine day, and hope you had a great Easter. And now it's back at it. Talk to you soon. Have a great week. Be back next week. It's coming. The tune of the drums are coming. Something's coming here. Try to get this broadcast going. There it is. Oh, yeah. The excellent music. Talk to you soon, everybody. Have a great week. Appreciate you.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.